get angry at a dime, right? Get mad, throw something, get mad, tear something up. They're doing these things because they are letting their emotions get the best of them. You understand me? And it's all over. It is literally all over against you.
The scripture very clearly tells us, it says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers of darkness of this world, against principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness." Yeah. In high places.
In high places, that's
so
right.
So it told us, that's like a warning, is letting you know.
Yep.
That this battle or the struggle that you have is not against flesh and blood.
That's right.
See, many times we say, oh, that person is just this or that person is just that.
Yep.
Right? But we don't understand that there are spirits that are taking aim at people, sending forth those fiery darts to tap into those emotional spirits.
Yep.
Those fiery darts want to tap into, and they want to use. Mm-hmm. They want to see whatever is going on in the person's mind. And they say, I want to use that as my trigger. I'm going to build on that.
Yes.
So I already see that this person is depressed. So I'm going to build up on top of that, right? Yeah. I already see that this person is very, very sensitive. So I'm going to build upon that. This person is angry all the time. I'm going to build upon that. So they want to utilize the spirits that they already see in motion, that are already acting and moving within a person.
Watch this. I'm going to say one word. Frustration. Hmm. Frustration can cause spirits to come. They can cause a person to get emotionally unstable. Frustration.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example, right? So you want something real bad. You want something to happen real bad. You want something to go a certain way real bad, right? You don't want to go and do this. You don't want to go and do that. You want to go over here. You want to go over there. And something interferes with that, right? Mm-hmm. So the next thing you know, you got an attitude because you couldn't get what you wanted to happen.
That was Watchman Reports, onlineministry.church. That episode is called Emotional Spirits Have an Effect on Weak Minds, or Take Control of Weak Minds. And it's true. But I'm going to start off with me first. So when I did Sukkuk, I started off great. I was excited. I was pumped up. I finally got things going. I had, you know, been able to do it with my partner. And then something happened to me. I don't know what it was. It was just frustration, like the Watchman Reports talked about, that frustrating when something doesn't happen for you, when you just, I was just out of sorts, and I thought I could fight it off, but I just couldn't fight it off. I dipped my hand back into sin. I turned back into a personal sin that I, or a vice that I've used as a comfort to get me through certain situations, and I dipped my hands back in sin. I it's like I couldn't even stop myself. It's like I rebelled against myself and the covenant I kept with the Most High. I turned back on that. Proverbs 28. He that covers his sins shall not prosper, but whoso confesses and forsakes them shall have mercy. So when I was feeling frustrated, my thing is to always blow it up. I still have that. I don't. That's a certain type of rebellion you have, where you have that effort. That's I have that. I, that effort that you just wanted to flip the entire table over and let the cards fall, or let the chips fall where they may. And that's what I did. I turned back because I was just frustrated. There's no way around it. I was just frustrated. I tried to rationalize it. I tried to reason with it. I even tried to talk out loud about it. It didn't work. I knew what I was doing, and I knew when I was going to start. I knew when I was going to stop. I knew where I was going. I knew. And I told my partner, just, hey, I turned back. I did something that I had stopped doing, and I turned back into that because of my frustration and anger with myself, basically. And so moving forward, I knew that my hands were unclean because I had touched sin. And I know the Most High was wroth with me because it's just, this was literally right after Day of Atonement, of forgiving of sins, you know, trying to quench your ruach, to be remorseful of the past sins during that year, and then to turn around for not even being 2 to 3 weeks, and then I'm already back into going backwards. And so with that, I knew that I could not offer the fire offering. So this happened around Sunday. So Friday, I was feeling it. Saturday, I hope it would, you know, it would go away. It didn't. It kind of, these spirits kind of attacked me, kept leaning on me. Instead of getting on my knees and praying, asking for mercy, asking for forgiveness, asking for a clear sight, a clear mind, I let it consume me. I just let it consume me. And when I know it, when I let it consume me, the first thing I think about is you guys. I can't tell you how many times I've had an episode ready to go for me to stop doing this show because I'm ready to just say F it. I can't tell you how many times I deleted one episode when I had one already prepared. Not this time, but I had one previous times when I was going through the same frustration, same anger. Why things not working out? Why I'm getting afflicted so much? Because when you come into this walk, for some reason you automatically think this life, when you find out the truth, when you find out the word, that things are going to be a little bit easier for you. Like, not everything has to be a fight, or you're not always afflicted when you come into this walk. I thought that. I know a lot of you probably thought that. Like, as soon as you come into this walk, you're golden. You could breathe easier. Everything is even Steven. It's like walking down the yellow brick road. You ain't got nothing to worry about. But that's not what this walk is. A lot of people are shocked. A lot of people stopped doing this walk because of that. I mean, I was almost there. I had an episode in the chamber ready to go, saying I was walking away from this for a while until I get my spirit right, my ruach right. Because I believe that certain things you just shouldn't be afflicted in, that you shouldn't see affliction in certain things, because you wait for the signs. You try to not lean on your own understanding, and you try to perceive the way the Most High would perceive, but we are still creatures of flesh. We are still new to this. No matter, none of us is 8 to 10 years into this walk or this awakening. We're not. Most of us are 4 to 5 years max. Maximum. So you take this awakening in, like they say, in dog years, I mean, we literally would be still adolescents. We're still children trying to unlearn and relearn. It's a process. It's a process. But when you have those emotional spirits attacking you in certain areas where they know you're going to falter, where they know you're going to bow out, that's when it gets hard. It really does. And I had this conversation with the Most High, and I hope I didn't sound like blaspheming to him, because that's not what I was actually really frustrated and wanted answers, because I felt like there's so many spirits. There are spirits for rebellion, there's spirits for witchcraft, there's spirits for homosexuality, there's spirits for anger and wrath and vindictiveness. There's so many spirits, but there's only one Ruach HaKodesh. And I feel like the Ruach HaKodesh, you know, you expect it to be your all defending mechanism. And it just doesn't happen that way. With certain things you have to work through and fight through yourself. The whole trial and being chosen to work in the furnace of affliction, the reality is you have to get through yourself first. That's the most important part, getting through yourself first. Then the Ruach can defend you and be your shield, be your light, be your armor. But it cannot be what it's supposed to be if we're still operating in emotional spirits and not know that we are. That's the whole point of the Ruach giving us wisdom and understanding, is knowing when we are being too emotional, when we know we're acting through emotionality and not through the spirit of the Most High. And it seems that, especially when those who are weak-minded, Not saying weak-minded as in you're dumb and you're not smart and you're just foolish. I'm talking about weak-minded as you don't know or you don't pay attention to what's going on around you or in you to be able to change it before things blow up on you. So I know when once I stopped, when I knew I was going to stop turning back, and it only lasted not even a whole day. So when I was like, all right, this is where I'm at. I knew why I did it. I knew where I was at. I knew my mind frame. So I tried to move on from that, but I knew the rest of Sukkot, I could not offer. I knew my hands were unclean. I could not offer to the Most High. And he confirmed it. I was reading something about Edom, and I just happened, the Ruach happened to say, yo, keep scrolling. Just keep on scrolling. And I saw a verse that I was reading. I think it was, I want to say I was reading something in Malachi about Esau being hated, and I just kept scrolling. And I saw that I would not accept an offering from you. So I was like, I already was like, look, I can't do it. I told my partner, you're going to have to do this one. But I was going to try to come back. I don't know if I was going to try to come back after, the day after. But once I saw that verse, he was speaking to me, said, I'm not accepting an offer from you. I was like, all right, I bowed out. I bowed out of it. So then the silver lining of that is I got to watch my daughter do the last four or five smoke offerings. I allowed her to do it, which was a blessing to me because she's getting ready to build her relationship with the Most High. And I wanted her to learn how to do these offerings herself. Even when she gets older, when these events happen, she already knows what to do. So I went out and bought, wood chips and stuff for her. And I didn't even touch the offering. I made sure I didn't touch anything. I told her how to do it and made sure she learned how to do it the proper way. Even down to offering the lamb or the meat mingled with flour and mingled with oil. So I got her into doing that. And I'm confident that her offerings were accepted because the fire never fizzled and never went out. It kept burning almost all night until the meat was literally burnt to a crisp. So I'm assuming that the Most High kept the fire going as accepting her pure offering because I didn't even stand anywhere near her. I let her go outside, kneel, say the prayer, and light the smoke offering. So it was a blessing. And also got her into carrying on. I let her do two or three prayers for dinner, and we ate in the tent. It was beautiful. I got to hear her actually pray in front of people, which is a blessing for me. So that was like the silver lining. But I knew where I was, where I stood with the Most High when he was wroth with me because of what I've done. Now, I want to survey this because I really want to know your guys' response to this. Because this is the other side of what happened to me in Sukkot. I ask a friend to join me in participating in Sukkot, which is 7 days, feasting and gladness and joy, offering and drinking wine and just celebrating and eating in a tent. This friend agreed to this, okay? So we get all the way through until what? Thursday. We get all the way to Thursday. Now this friend is tired because they had to work. They're starting, this is their work week starting around Thursday and into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So this person came to my house tired. Understandable. So I'm assuming and thinking, like, I'm gonna play the compassionate bit. So I was like, all right, you don't have to actually stay within the tent. If you're really tired and I know you have a long work week, don't worry about staying in the tent. Don't worry about it. It's cool. But I'm still expecting this person, this friend, to participate in eating within the tent because you still have to dwell within the tent. Mind you, this friend agreed before coming that they were going to participate in 100% of the Sukkot. So when I realized this friend wasn't coming in to eat, and I asked, like, yo, did you eat already? I got no response, so I went back in the house. I was like, yo, you going to eat? You going to eat with us in the tent? And I said this is how I'm talking to you. I said this real calmly. Did you eat? Why didn't you eat in the tent? This person looked at me straight in my eyes. It was already formulating an excuse. Now, I want to know what you guys would have done. If you agreed to Sukkot at my house, and you agreed that we should, and you know that scripture says that we should dwell in tents. And I'm giving you free, I'm giving you leeway, saying that you don't have to be in a tent for all night, because I know you have to work. Now, what do you guys say to me if I come back in the house? You have already ate, and now I'm asking you, why didn't you come into the tent? What would be you guys, your guys' answer? I want, email me, because I want to know, because I want to take a poll or a survey how you guys would handle this situation. I know I'm not being emotionally high strung, because I didn't yell, I didn't scream, I wasn't even upset. I was just like, yo, what's good? What's good? You agreed to this. So that means doing it every single day until this thing is over. So why now get to the point where we're almost at the closing end of this feast day, to now want to stay in the house and eat, not dwell in a tent, be absent? So if the Most High was to take an attendance, after we pretend, or after you say, oh, I really want to be all about the Most High, I really want to follow, really want to be obedient, that you allow your spirit, your emotional spirit, to take control, to answer for you. Instead of just saying, you know what, I apologize. It was my bad. But yet the reason I got was because me and my daughter was watching. See, I put a projector inside the tent, so we were watching biblical movies and all that type of stuff. So that's kind of our little thing. And the reason I got was, oh, you guys were in there watching the screen and watching movies. I didn't want to be the only one sitting there. So I'm like, okay, this is more about the Most High. This isn't about me or what my daughter is watching. This is about obeying the Most High. That's how that's how I said it. I'm still not understanding. When I tell you, I literally watched the emotional spirit flow right into this person, to now they started playing the victim. That's why I put that clip in the beginning. Because I didn't scream, I didn't yell, I wasn't upset. I didn't curse. I came hat in hand, humbled as possible. And I somehow got reversed on by making it seem it was something I did wrong. I got cha-cha slide, Uno card reversed on. So I thought I was going to be like, get an apology. It was like, okay. But no, it was work over the Most High. That's how I saw it. I didn't say it, but I just said, okay, this looks like it's an emotional issue that somebody has brought work to my house. It's not thinking about the Most High, not thinking about his obedience, but yet is going to play the victim enough to be absent from something that they agreed to. This is not even for me. If it was for me, I would be upset. I would be really upset. I wasn't upset. This friend wanted to do this to cook. So I'm preparing everything for everybody to participate. But if one person don't participate and rather stay in the house, I need to know why this person's not participating. And if it's one thing that truly annoys me, is make themselves a victim of the decision that they made and not take accountability, that's when I was like, wow, okay. I just walked right out. I didn't even finish the conversation. I just walked out, got back in the tent, and did my thing. But in reality, what you get is when you deal with people who are used to being around toxic relationships and toxic friendships, that stuff rubs off on them. So everybody that dealt with them or have dealt with them in the past has done them dirty. So they are always in a position where they are always right. They are always the victim. So that's their go-to. When friends mistreat them, when they face betrayal, when people shun them, their first thing is, oh, I'm always right because I'm always the victim and the people I'm around are always wrong. So that spirit jumps on people like this. It became throwing darts at a dartboard of how can I stay in my victim mentality? How can I stay in my victimhood and not take accountability for not knowing the emotional spirit that dwells within me for me not to take accountability, but to turn it around and make it seem like it was my fault. I want to know if I want to know what type of spirits working within you guys. What would you guys would have done in that situation? Because at the end of the day, especially Sukkot, everybody is going to be made to do these feast days. Everybody. How do I know? Go to Zechariah chapter 14. I'll start at verse 1. Behold, the day of Yahuwah comes, and your spoil shall be divided in the midst of you. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth in captivity. And the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall Yahuwah go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. And his feet shall stand in the day upon the Mount Olives, which is before Jerusalem, on the east, and the Mount Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. And there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the Negev, the south. And ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Atzel. Yeah, ye shall flee, like as ye fled from before the earthquake days of the Uzziahu, king of Yehuda. And Yahuwah Elohiah shall come, and all the Kodeshim with you. And it shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear nor dark, but it shall be one day which shall be known to Yahuwah, not day nor night. But it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. And it shall be in that day that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, and half of them toward the hinder sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. And Yahuwah shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall there be one Yahuwah, and his name one. All the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Ramon, south of Jerusalem, and it shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place from Benjamin's gate unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, and from the tower of Shenanel unto the king's winepress. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. And this shall be the plague wherewith Yahuwah will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. This sounds like nuclear fallout. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from Yahuwah shall be among them, and they shall lay hold everyone on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. And Yehuda also shall fight at Jerusalem. And the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together, gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. And so shall be the plague of the horse, of the mule, of the camel, and of the ass, and all the beasts that shall be in these tents as this plague. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the king Yahuwah Sabaoth and to keep the feast of Sukkot. You hear me? Keep the feast of Sukkot. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the king Yahuwah Sabaoth, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Mitzrayim go not up and come not, that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith Yahuwah will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the feast of Sukkot. This shall be the punishment of Mitzrayim and the punishment of all the nations that come not up to keep the feast of Sukkot. That means everybody will do this feast. Some of you are blessed already to hear this information or know this information or have the spirit to participate in these feast days, because you don't want to go through a plague in order to be made to bow down and to do these feast days. This is why he wants us to do them. This is why I snapped on my Sight to the Blind page over Able Music 12, whatever his thing was, when he talked about, oh, these feast days were stapled to the cross. They weren't. They're for all time to be passed down from our generation to generation to generation. Religion is not the staple. for the Most High's word. People claiming to be a soldier for God. You don't even, you calling him a title, not even calling him his name. And you're not really a soldier if you go on there complaining. You, a grown man, can't do the investigating yourself or the research yourself to know when these feast days are. But everybody will be doing these feast days, whether they like it or not. You can either learn through the Ruach or you'll learn through plague. And this is what's going to happen to a lot of people who are able to hear the word but do not listen. The plague, judgment. Because the Most High is abundant in mercy. But at the same time, if he got to make you do these feast days, there's ways he can make you do them. There's a way he can make you still. There's a way he can make you sit in your place. There's a way he can make you stagnant. Now, if he's giving you the free will to do it willingly, because he says this is what you should do to keep alive. This is what you should do to keep my commandments. This is what you should observe. And if you choose not to do that, then who are you? Then who is to blame for your problems, your issues? Who are you going to blame for your affliction? When you chose to not be obedient to his word, it ain't being obedient to man. Man is only used to get you to understand that you have been given so much grace through all of our foolishness and all of our wickedness. We have been given such mercy and grace that we should already be prepared to do just the little things. Mind you, he knows his creatures are sensitive. He knows our creatures are emotional. He knows this. That's why he gives us so much abundant mercy. And I thought that as soon as we came into this walk, we would never be tried or never be afflicted in certain areas. But the reason why we are afflicted in certain areas is to expose our weaknesses. See, we don't get our strengths exposed. It's our weaknesses that get exposed. If we have a chink in the fence, the only way we can know to fix that fence is for our weaknesses to come out. Regardless of how they come out, they can come out in an argument. It can come out in our wicked deeds. It can come out in our backsliding. It'll come out. That's just exposing what leads up to us turning back, what leads us up to misstepping or transgressing. That's where our weaknesses are, so that's what we should pay attention to. We never pay attention to what our strengths are. My strength is to hope for this battle to spill out in the streets so it become a real fight. That's what my strengths are. My strength is in war. That's where my real strengths are. So I always pay attention to what's going on in this world because I know I'm looking to expose my enemy. I'm to a point where I'm trying to expose certain celebrities so I dare them to say my name. It's the reason why they don't say my name. Because in my mind, most of the people I expose ain't going to whoop my ass. That's straight up and down. But the Most High is not going to give me that type of war because that's my strengths. I learn nothing from my strengths. I learn everything from my weaknesses. And that's the part of understanding when you had these emotional spirits in the day of affliction, the day when your countenance is low, the day of frustration, is to regroup. Think with reason and logic of what your next step should be. Because those voices are going to be so loud within your head, what you should do, what you normally would do. And like when it comes to these voices, these people are, I hear demons. No. Those demons sound like you. Whatever goes off in your head, they talk in your voice. They talk in your tone. They talk in your speech. We don't hear voices in our head of Tom, Dick, and Harry from, with accents from Baltimore or Texas. No, we hear ourselves within our minds. We hear the thoughts from our past situations, that how we handle those things in the past, those are the voices that come back. It's never a strange voice. It's always someone we know, and it's us. And if you are weak-minded, or if you do not understand this, and if you're always playing the victim, and if you're always ready to point fingers, you are going to miss the true purpose of this walk. You are never going to grow, because you're going to retreat back to being weak-minded. You're going to retreat back to being around people who are more weak-minded than you, because it makes you feel strong-minded. You are only stronger than the people, than the influence you're around. If you're around wickedness and unrighteousness and people who are not upright, you, regardless of how you are walking, if you're walking a completely different role, if you're still around this type of environment, you feel superior to people with the bar is already lowered. That's like me going into a strip club, knowing the Most High's law, statutes, commandments, and acting superior. But if I go to some brothers, like I, for instance, when I did the podcast with Ron Charles, the brother that did Truth Unedited, I felt humbled. I felt like I didn't deserve this interview with this brother. I didn't. I felt humbled. I felt beneath him, because this brother is on point with the works. Work after work after work after work. I never know if he's ever suffered affliction during this walk, other than what he's told me before. Me, I'm so all over the place with my emotions sometimes. Sometimes I don't want to do this show. Sometimes I want to cancel the whole thing. There's sometimes I want to delete my Instagram, delete my pages. But Ron, work after work after work. It's episode after episode. It's it nonstop. I ever wanted this brother ever feel like I'm not doing this no more. But his work is amazing to me. That he humbled me. He makes me want to up my game. So if I were around people who are already weak-minded and low-balled and the works that they do, I don't feel like nothing's wrong with me. No one's ever going to point out something that was wrong, because I'm walking superior amongst people who are already set the bar very low in their own personal relationships and their own lives. But when you get around people who are like-minded, are a little bit above you in righteousness, or a little bit above you in this walk, you know, you feel inadequate. Strong-minded people rise to the occasion. Weak-minded people falter, fold, and say, you know what, this ain't for me. I need to go back where I'm safe at. I need to be around the people I know who aren't going to challenge me to make me a better person. I'm used to that. And some of you go through these type of experiences. When this walk gets a little bit too isolated and you're expected to do more and you can't do more, you retreat back to people who aren't doing anything. You should ask yourself, who around you is actually putting in work for this kingdom? Who around you is suffering the same righteous afflictions that you are? There is a reason why we're not grouped up together. If you read scripture, the Most High talks nothing about, he talks nothing but gathering. I don't know how many times, every time the Israelites go into captivity, he got to gather. I'm gathering. I'm gathering. The Israelites aren't saying, okay, our time is up in Babylon. Our time is up in Egypt. Our time is up in Greece and Persia. Let's go. No, the Most High has always made it the point, I will gather, just like us who are in America. I will gather you. So during our isolation, it's a learning process before we are gathered amongst everybody, so we're not beefing with each other. So our strengths will be your strengths. We won't share our weaknesses. That means you won't be a hindrance to me, I won't be a hindrance to you. That's the point of gathering at the proper time. I didn't understand that until I understood it now, and it just came out of my mouth. there is a reason why we're isolated in such a way. Because if we're pushed together on our own accord, we won't be able to flow in our own walks, because we'll be leaning on each other, only on our strengths, and we will be hiding our weaknesses and not really getting them exposed, because we're piggybacking on each other's strengths and hiding our weaknesses and transgressions from each other. But you, as something you have to figure out yourself. No one can make you do it. We can play this, it's all everybody's fault but mine. We can play this, I don't have to be accountable when I'm the victim. We can play this role. We can play this role as long as you want to play that role. But it's going to be, like I said, it's you either going to do it the right way, or do it through plagues, do it through correction, do it through discipline, because the Father gives you free will to make your mind of how you want this strap to come out, how you want this butt whipping. Do you want to be tapped, or do you want the belt to come out? It's really all on you, because the Most High has given us so much mercy and so much praise, I mean, so much leeway to figure this out. That he, like I said before in previous episode, there's already a set time. Yahusha talked about the soil. If it's rocky, but a little bit of the soil mixed in, or if it just ain't, the seed ain't just sitting in there. Regardless, if it doesn't come up in its proper due season, which means if you don't bloom in this proper season, you are going to get cut. That means that sickle is going to come out. The wheat and the tares, they're going to take them up together, regardless of where you are in this walk, regardless of how you bloom or blossom, or you haven't budded yet. It won't matter. The Most High is not going to wait or change his set time based on if you will get it or not. We keep using the excuse that, oh, he's going to always take care of me. He's always going to watch out for me. He is watching out for you because he know you will make it to this point where you would have to take the training wheels off, that you would have to be able to walk this walk by yourself. Period. You have to walk this walk by yourself and figure it out on your own. The Most High has got other things to tend to than to keep, gotta bring you up, get you to train, get you babe's milk, get you on the bottle again. You come off the bottle, gotta put you back on the bottle. You crawling, you were walking, now you got to go back to crawling. It's only but so many times he's going to keep allowing this to happen with you until he's like, you know what, you got to figure it out yourself. But my time is not stopping. My day of judgment is not stopping. My day of wrath is not stopping. This is the whole wake up period. That's why he says, I'm going to forgive those who I can forgive, and those who are laden with sins, and those who are not putting forth profitable works, I'm not worrying about. That's why I love the book of Ezra. Let the multitude perish, which were born in vain. That hurts to know who the multitude is. It hurts. It's going to hurt even more when you are not listed with the multitude, but then you want to be with the multitude because you can't get out of your own way. That's more embarrassing. And it made me think of this verse too, coincidentally. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. For it had been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than, after they have known it, to turn back from the holy commandment delivered unto them. But it has happened unto them according to the true proverb, the dog is turned to its own vomit again, and the sow that was washed to her wallowing in the mire. That's what we are in danger of doing. When we are working or operating through emotionalism, when we let those spirits lean on us, that's what happens to us. When we are not accountable for our own actions, we are not accountable for our own emotions, how we think and our moods and how we're frustrated and our actions that derive from these spirits leaning on us, exposing our weakness. So you could say, yes, I was a dog that turned back to his own vomit. But do I let that stop me? No. Am I going to let that weigh me down? No. Am I going to let that chip away at my soul and my spirit? No. I understand why I did what I did. I come back. I ask for forgiveness. I take a hit on things that I wanted to do for the Most High that I couldn't put my hands on to do. And I move on, knowing that I'm still his inheritance. I'm still of his bloodline. I'm still of Yasharel. I'm still a child of promise. And I know that he would offer me the same mercy and grace if I sought it remorsefully. Because I know the Most High knows exactly what generation this is. He knows exactly what makes us fall. He knows exactly how we think and the thoughts that go around in our minds. He knows. For certain things, he is not going to put a stop to unless we want to put a stop to it ourselves. Now, it's sad to me that not everybody will be able to understand that. Like those four girls in Pepperdine who died in a car accident. They say died in a car accident, but people don't understand Jamarsha, so I'm not even going to get into it on this episode. I'm just going to say it was a hit. It was a hit. Those four girls was out, and it was sad because one of those girls was a black girl, Desmond Williams, which is sad. She was so hyped of last year actually rushing for this particular sorority that she wanted to belong. Lost in the sauce. And this so-called driver in a BMW just happened to hit four girls at once. Four girls at once, killing all four. That sounds kind of off, right? Four girls at once? I mean, supposedly what it said was they were standing between cars or something like that, and he ran into a couple cars before he hit them. I mean, I've done the numbers, and I know it ain't what they say it is. But, like I said, she put her hands in idolatry, and she was judged. She was let go of. And like I said before, the Most High don't care about the multitude. And this is not a time to want to join sororities. This is not a time to join fraternities. This is not a time to be a part of worldly organizations. It really isn't. If you've seen what is happening in the entertainment industry, how fast they are sacrificing bodies, how they're ritualizing artists, you know it trickles down. It's like a pyramid scheme. It trickles down. That means we are hearing things that we have never heard of in the last 5 or 10 years. You have not heard a mass death of four college girls getting hit by a car. You have never heard this. The rituals are happening so fast and so blatant. I mean, you really had to have your head in the sand to not understand what's really going on around you. I mean, you could say Desmond Williams was an Israelite. Why did the Most High didn't wake her up? Why he didn't choose her to be part of the remnant? Did she get signs of waking up? Did she get the truth before she died? That's a scary thought. Did she get to see scripture? Did she grow up in a Christian church or a Christian background? What did she learn that she still said, you know what? I'm going to be a part of this all-white Greek sorority. She didn't go after the Divine Nine. She went into straight the white girl sororities. Wisdom of Solomon, chapter 3, 10 verse. You can do 10 to 19, but I'm going to do 10 to 13. But the wicked shall be punished according to their own imaginations, which have neglected the righteous and forsaken Yahuwah. For whoso despises wisdom and nurture, he is miserable, and their hope is vain, their labors unfruitful, and their works unprofitable. Their women are foolish, and their children wicked. Their offspring is cursed. Wherefore blessed is the barren that is undefiled, which has not known the sinful bed. She shall have fruit and the visitation of souls. And of course it says, blessed the eunuch for not being defiled by a woman. They will have peace in paradise. But they that put their trust in him shall understand the truth, and such as be faithful in love shall be abide with him. For grace and mercy is to his saints, and he has care for his elect. He has care for his elect. So even though you are not of Yasharel, you obviously are understanding this truth. You are of one of the elect. Now, if you are also tapped to be the elect, and you're letting your emotions run wild, that you are forcing yourself not to be a part of the elect because you want to be around people who are performing unprofitable works, you might as well be as a dog turning back to your own vomit and not learning these lessons and not learning the truth. Because the truth starts from within. Too many people are trying to find the truth outside and think the outside truth is going to change what's wrong with them inside. This is not how this walk goes. Everything is from the inside out, not the outside in. And you cannot use outside and then try to use inside at the same time. There's no way you can make those energies work. You can't take in and put out at the same time. It does not work, and it only causes you to be more high strung. It causes you to have more frustration. It's causing you to have more disappointments and more arguments than you ever need to have in your lifetime. It always starts from the inside out. When Yahushua talked about this mustard seed, he wasn't talking about the mustard seed outside planted in the far vineyard somewhere. He's talking about that mustard seed within you. He didn't talk about it having it from the outside. He talked about it from having it in the inside. That's what it means to have a mustard seed of faith. But if you're more interested in making sure your mustard seed with this world grows, then you are going to have the same attitude and emotions in order to help you stay in that outside world. Which means if you're around people who are focusing on the inside and understanding logic and reasoning, it ain't going to ever mix. It's two energies going in opposite directions or clashing into each other. But if you're weak-minded and not understanding this, this is going to be your downfall. It always starts from the inside. That's when I came into this walk, I knew about the Most High, but I was not ready to approach the Most High because I did not fix what was going on inside myself first. I had some deep internal issues, and those issues were childhood issues that were unresolved. And mind you, I came from a two-parent household. My parents are still married to this day. But the way I was raised in such an imbalanced relationship, which means I got more of my father than I got more of my mother, so I was more aggressive and more high-strung that way and closed off than I had, you know, the maternal nurturing. So I was a little off. I had to fix that first. I had to fix why I lashed out. I had to fix why my first thing is to go to violence and when I get into confrontation, because that's all I knew within sports was confrontation. I know organized chaos is where I'm the king of that. I'm king of organized chaos. If you set up a parameter where I know where I can go and can't go, but I can still be violent, I'm there. I'm with you. I'll dwell in safety there. But if you told me to dwell outside this box and be compassionate, be vulnerable and all that, no, I'm good here. I'll be quiet. But that's what I had to learn. I had to start internally. I didn't try to go out all these other places and try to feed my flesh with beautiful leaves and beautiful surroundings and vacations here and there. That didn't do nothing for me because it still did not fix. It still did not complete what was going on within inside of me. I had to address it. And once I addressed it, I knew where my problem was. And once I outgrew the problem, I knew I cannot be in the certain surroundings or around certain people that would trigger these same type of emotions until I could get a handle on it. So that's why I parted ways with my family, because I knew I can't be around in stadiums watching football games just because my dad coached. I couldn't be in that surrounding anymore. I couldn't be in that environment. It wasn't serving me anymore. And doing so, I don't have a relationship with my mom or my father anymore. But it was for this walk. It benefited me because it was for this walk. This walk taught me a lot. I was too dependent on way too many people. Now the Most High removed them. Now I'm only dependent on Him. Even though I know He is wroth with me sometimes because I complain so much to Him. But I'd rather that than paying $200, $300 to a therapist and getting no blessings from it and not learning anything from it and just getting hoarse and tired from always rambling and running my mouth to this stranger. I'd rather run it to the Most High. So at least I know I'm going to get a little bit of alleviation from my affliction. But those four girls that die in that accident, they don't have that chance. And a lot of us think that nothing's going to ever happen to us. That we will always have this infinity number of chances and mercy and grace to be able to do what we want, screw up when we want, and think how we want. Until we are not. Until we run into a Jamantra ritual. Or we just run into our own foolishness through our own unprofitable works. And we make a fool of ourselves and our family members for not heeding the truth. It's nothing more embarrassing is to know this truth, walk this truth, know this truth, understand this truth, go backwards, and then you got to meet the Most High. And He got to look at you with the shrug face like, well, see, that's the part we don't get. That it's not just judgment day, that when our bodies are done, when we pass away from this earth, we see the Most High's face. Before judgment day, we get to walk this earth 7 days as a spirit. And it's mentioned in the book of Ezra, chapter 7, read it. We get to walk around 7 days. Now, you can walk around 7 days happy. You'll be able to dwell with Abraham and all the prophets and all them that are in the safe habitation of souls. Or you could walk around this place 7 days, doing the shoulda, coulda, wouldas. I shoulda did this. I shoulda did this for the Most High. I shoulda been here. I shoulda done all I could when He gave me grace and mercy to participate in feast days, participate in the Shabbats, participate in righteousness and holiness. I shoulda did more. But we all think in our own ego and pride that, oh, He ain't gonna never take me out. Not right now, He not. But you don't know, He's been giving you so much grace and mercy that time is going to expire on that grace and on that mercy if we keep choosing to turn back to our own vomit. Now, I don't want this episode to get too long because I really want to save the next episode for what's going on in the Middle East. I've seen too many Arabs from out of the Middle East running their mouths, talking about the children of Israel, the Jews that are there in their country, and blah, blah, blah. I'm gonna put this information out on Instagram first, and then I'm going to talk about it in the next previous episode. I mean, in the next episode, especially when it comes to how the Arabs came to be. They think they're just from Ishmael's children, but actually Ishmael married into Abraham's concubine, which basically Abraham's side chick, because Sarah was still alive. If you read First Chronicles and it talks about Keturah, it don't say Keturah was his glorified wife. Sarah was still alive. Keturah was his concubine. So my man had Hagar, which is an Egyptian maidservant, which had Ishmael. And then Ishmael married into his concubine, Keturah, married into their children, and they became the Arabs. As well as Esau married into Ishmael as well. So then that's where you get the light-skinned, lighter Arabs. And then you get the dark-skinned Arabs that are, you know, obviously mingled into the Keturah sons. Because Keturah, I forget what her ethnicity was. It really doesn't talk about it. It didn't really explain that she was like on the same level as Sarah. They just said she a concubine, maidservant and a concubine. And then, you know what the funny part is? That's where I got a little annoyed and complaining with the Most High. Because I'm like, fam, I would not be afflicted so much, or I wouldn't be going through certain afflictions in my previous days if He just let me have a second wife and a concubine. I would be in heaven. Because if you go from one argument, you'd be like, nah, I ain't gonna argue with you. I'm gonna go to my concubine's house. And it was normal. The Most High was still blessing Abraham when he had a maidservant that he had a child with, had a child with Sarah, got what he really wanted. Then when Sarah was still alive, he then got himself a concubine and had all these six or seven sons and children with this woman. And the Most High blessed him. So that's why I'm like, right, to live in those days, and even Jacob, Yaakov, Yasharel, he got twin sisters. He had got twin sisters. He had Rachel and he had Leah. When them two got the arguing because they couldn't produce a seed for him, they gave him their maidservants. My man got four women. And that's where we come from. Those four women. And the Most High, be fruitful and multiply, he was not playing with that scripture. Be fruitful and multiply. So we think with this westernized society that we live in, we think it can't work, won't work. But back in the day, it was normal. We make it seem like it's a taboo thing nowadays. But back then, it was normal. But it also came with some blessings, and it also came with some curses. Jubilees 20, I'll give you a little taste. And in the 42nd Jubilee, in the first year of the seventh week, Abraham called Ishmael and his 12 sons, and Yitzchak and his two sons, and the six sons of Keturah and their sons. And he commanded them that they should observe the way of Yahuwah, that they should work righteousness and love each his neighbor, and act on this manner amongst all men, that they should each so walk with regard to them as to do judgment and righteousness on the earth, that they should circumcise their sons according to the covenant which he had made with them, and not deviate to the right hand or to the left of all the paths which Yahuwah had commanded us, and that we should guard ourselves from all fornication and uncleanness, and renounce from amongst us all fornication and uncleanness. And if any woman or maid commit fornication amongst you, burn her with fire, and let them not commit fornication with her after their eyes and their heart. And let them not take to themselves women from the daughters of Canaan, for the seed of Canaan will be rooted out of the land. Now, we already know what Esau did when he married Canaanite women, not one, but two. And he told them of the judgment of Nephilim and the judgment of the Sodomites, and how they had been judged on account of their wickedness, and how had died on account of their fornication and uncleanness and mutual corruption through fornication. And guard yourselves from all fornication and uncleanness and from all pollution of sin, lest ye make our name a curse and your whole life a hissing, and all your sons to be destroyed by the sword, and ye become a curse like Sodom, and all your remnant as the sons of Gomorrah. I implore you, my sons, love the Elohim of heaven, and cleave ye all his commandments, and walk not after their idols and after their uncleanness, and make not for yourselves molten or graven in Elohim. Now, what did those two nations did? What did Ishmael and Esau end up doing? This is where we get Jesus Christ, Roman Catholic Church, and the Kaaba stone out in Mecca, which is where I get to this next episode, which is where the descendants of Ishmael and Keturah went off to. They were given the land east of Babylon, Babylon being in East Africa. So they had everything from east. So everything in Arabia to all the way over to the Middle East was those sons. And this is what they created. They created two religions that is the most ignorant and thoughtless and pointless and unprofitable religions in all of mankind, but it's based off those two sons. So they didn't even listen to them. So they are a curse. That's why in Deuteronomy it says, for us, you will be cursed to worship wood and stone, because those two nations did not follow Yahuwah. They became a hissing and a curse. So those two nations created the wood and stone, the wood of the cross, and this Kaaba stone of Mecca. It all comes back. Once you read Jubilees and Jasher, it really all zeroes in. You look at how they using these Arabs and the Muslims for this foolishness. Man, all you got to do is go back to what Abraham blessed and how he didn't bless and how he cursed and how he warned his children. And not just Esau and Jacob. He warned Ishmael. He warned Keturah and all her and their children. He gave them strict warning of what they should do to be blessed. And the Most High told Abraham too, look, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to multiply you. Your children are going to be multiplied and blessed. But at the same time, that's only if they stay within the Most High's parameters of how to be blessed. He's not going to bless them if they go through religion. He's not going to bless them if they go through idol worship and sin and witchcraft. So that's going to be an entertaining show for next week. Also, next week is when I'm starting the raffle again. So I want you guys to start preparing your numbers. And I'm going to tell you this. There's going to be a rule change. If a couple of you land on the same number, I'm only going to take the person who emailed me their number first. I'm going to do it that way. I tried to do it the other way and people wouldn't call me back or contact me when it was their turn. So I'm doing one person. It's going to be one winner. This ain't the lottery system where we splitting up the money. It's one winner. So whoever listened to it first, whoever answers the challenge first or answers the lottery first, that's the one who's getting the show. Okay? That's how we're doing it from now on. Also, to save you from the digging, it won't be any number that's associated with me. It won't be my birthday. It won't be the month. It won't be the day. It won't be the year. Don't even go through it. Do not look at any jersey numbers that I've ever worn in my life, because it won't be none of them. It will be a completely random number, so everybody has a great shot. I just did it the first time, that number, because I thought it would be obvious that I'd get everybody on the show. Only few of you bit at that. So now it's going to be a completely random number. Has nothing to do with me whatsoever. All right? I'll see y'all next week.